Welcome back to the Hoops Temple Podcast, Sacramento Kings Edition. Joined by Jack as always, but special guest, the Dominator, Mike Dom, SDS legend, South Dakota State, and played for the Sacramento Kings in the Summer League. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me on.
Of course. Glad to have you. Now, I got a note. Watching the Summer League, I thought you looked fantastic. We were both really impressed. We're all in on the Mike Dom train. I thought you had such an impressive impact. I thought, and in the best way, when I first saw you, I thought you were Vezenkov, the Kings hero signing, because I was like, there's no way that guy's not on the roster yet. No way. He's making all these blocks, and he's hitting threes, and I'm all in.
No, I appreciate that. It was a fantastic summer league, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity from the Kings, and it was definitely a summer to remember.
For sure. Now, just to clue you in on what we're going to do for a bit, we're going to start with that Summer League stuff, some King stuff. Then I'm going to take a big step back and let Jack run some EuroLeague questions. He lived in Spain for a bit, has a more European following on TikTok that I don't have. So when I stop talking, that's why. But to start with the King specifically, mindset-wise, were you focusing on trying to make that team, or was this an audition for any team or any league, or was this very Sacramento Kings focused?
It's kind of complicated, but I actually was on contract at that time to come back to my team in Italy, and I moved at the end of last season. I moved my contract buyout from this past summer to the next year. So I was kind of going into the situation of I'm just gonna, you know, kind of use this as a summer workout platform for myself, get a play against some high level competition, and kind of see what happens. And then, you know, it turned out to be a really great opportunity for me. And I kind of knew that I wasn't going to be able to take anything that came from it just because I knew I had my contract going back in overseas. But I definitely knew that kind of just getting on, the NBA radar again after being overseas for the past three seasons is definitely a good thing to recirculate my name in the mix. And I definitely think that it'll be something that helps me out going into this upcoming summer where I actually do have a buyout again.
So that would be a free agent at the end of this NBA season.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So once I'm done over here too, I think our season will get over around June, then I pretty much will be able to get out of the current contract I'm in.
We're rooting for you. We really are. I had found an article that said, and this is the title, it says one undrafted right. Kings Summer League player who could make the roster in 2023 and 2024, and it's Mike Dom. Everyone's in. Everyone's so in. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned high level talent on the Summer League roster of your teammates. Who stood out the most? Who'd you have most fun playing with?
Definitely Keegan. That guy is he's a character in itself. He's just a fantastic dude. And actually, we've got mutual friends just from him being around the Iowa area. And then I played with one of his close childhood friends, Matt Mims, in college at South Dakota State. But he was definitely just one dude that unbelievable to get a practice with, play against, see his skill set, his work ethic, and obviously his future is so, so bright. And yeah, that's definitely, he's such a great dude. And that was a very fortunate to be able to, you know, spend a little bit of time with him in this summer.
He has kind of a more subdued personality outside with the fans. It's kind of a joke among Kings fans of how, you know, you never see him smiling. He's kind of like Kawhi Leonard. Yep. Is that like his real personality? Or is that just because what he puts forward?
No, that's legit. Yeah, he really is. He's true to himself, and that's exactly how he is, and just how he carries himself. But like I said, he's seriously a one of a kind guy.
How did that journey happen, though, in terms of reaching that agreement with the Kings? What's the behind the scenes like of being overseas and all of a sudden being in the NBA Summer League?
Yeah, for me, it was just reaching out to my agent, and I pretty much told him that I wanted to play Summer League this summer. And the Kings is just kind of who accepted me being on the roster, and it was kind of well communicated too that, yeah, I was just, you know, I wouldn't be able to get out of my contract. It was kind of a, I'm going to get on, I'm going to practice, I'll be able to stay in shape this summer and use it as my summer workout pretty much. And then and that's kind of just how it happened. It was one of those things where I just texted my agent, and then that's who came back with.
Is that more of a common summer league experience, or is that more unique to European players coming over here?
It's different for everybody. I would say for me, I was one of the oldest guys in summer league this summer, probably at 27. You know, summer league is really geared towards all those guys coming out of college or the G League and things like that. And guys, even more so now, even from when I came out of college, it's really geared towards giving those guys who are already in the system, you know, an opportunity to show themselves. But it definitely is a good spot for that those European guys to come over and showcase themselves and have opportunities on certain teams. But I would say my situation was a little more rare of just kind of hopping on a team and getting that opportunity of just being able to kind of talk to my agent and be able to do that.
I gotta ask, is my article wrong? Because it says the one undrafted Kings summer league player who could make the roster this season, is that out of the question given the contract?
Yeah.
Do I have to contact there's fake news going around.
Yeah, and it's funny because I had so many people reaching out to me about what's going on, like what are you gonna sign this and that, and I'm like, no, I can't. It's a complicated situation with my contract overseas right now. But no, I definitely it was, like I said, it was a fantastic opportunity. And yeah, I had to explain that to a lot of people, a lot of my friends and family, the situation.
We're heartbroken. We're crushed here, man. We were reading articles thinking we'd see you in the long run. Hopefully you can make your return to us.
Yeah, now, fingers crossed for next year.
For sure. For sure. We will. Looking at the summer league, what's the preparation like? Cause you're already in overseas. Do you just hit the ground running straight into that? Or is there a different level to this than usual?
So I played my first summer league back in 2019, and that was like a whole new, out of college and getting, you know, that small taste of NBA summer league is a completely different, you know, mindset and things. And that's really when I kind of had no idea what was going on, and I just hit the ground running, trying to do the best I could when I played summer league with the Trailblazers at that time. And then after that, I went overseas, and I've been overseas for the last 4 years. So kind of now I had that experience from before. I know the level of basketball that I've played overseas and the guys I've played against. So going into this summer league, it was kind of a breeze for me in terms of I had no pressure on me. I knew I was just going in and could hoop and enjoy my time and, you know, hang out in Sacramento where I've never been before, and then be able to, you know, have friends and family come out and watch me play in Las Vegas. So it kind of was just a no pressure situation for me. And I was in a really good headspace to be able to enjoy summer league, I think, on a different level than the first time I played in it.
In terms of like your direct play style going between the United States and going to back to Europe, do you have to change your own personal style at all, or does the pace of the game really fix it for you?
No, I actually feel very fortunate because I feel like the way I play and the way that I fit in a lot of systems, it's not hard for me to adjust. The play style is definitely different. You know, in Europe, I would say in different countries, they're definitely geared towards different ways. Like Spain, super defensive geared, like low scoring games. Guys aren't going to have, you know, you're going to find very, very few guys that are scoring above 20 points a game in the ACB. And then in Italy, it's kind of the opposite. I would say it's a more offensive league, and you know, they want to look to run up the score and things like that, and they play a little bit quicker. But the main thing is nothing is as fast and athletic as the NBA. So that's like the biggest thing. You know, you just have so many versatile players that can play so many different spots. And there is still, you know, a small level of adjustment you have to get used to coming from Europe to the NBA. But like I said, I feel like I've had so much experience now that it's easy for me to just kind of jump in and you know, get going with whatever's going on.
Such a different pace and play style in terms of both leagues. It's a really great question and answer. I want to ask a more personal question. What's it like being a fan of basketball? And really, what's your favorite team, and how do you hold on to that fandom playing professional basketball?
I have a couple favorite teams. Obviously, growing up watching basketball my entire life, I've like just, I love it. I can't get enough of it. And I actually, surprisingly, I don't follow along to basketball as much as I used to, just because it actually is very difficult in Europe. And then you're messing with VPNs, and then you have to figure out how to bring up college games. I would say it's more so watching professional games. But I still follow along with my college team. I never really had like a favorite NBA team when I was growing up. The closest team to my hometown was the Denver Nuggets. But I didn't really follow that much either. You know, the main thing I do now is really is just I follow along with the teams who I had some college teammates who currently play overseas. I follow along their seasons and things like that. I couldn't necessarily say I have a, you know, a direct favorite sports team that I'm super dedicated to and follow along with. So
I totally get that. It's almost like you're too close to the sun in a way. You're so close to those areas. It's tough to be a true fan. You mentioned college a few times. I wanted to touch on one thing. This is just a fun question I wanted to ask. You are the all-time leading scorer in South Dakota State history.
Yep.
Congratulations. That's incredible. Do you know who you passed up for number two?
Nate Walters.
NBA legend. Me and Jack were losing our minds. We were thrilled about
that. Yeah, he's such a great dude. I haven't had the chance to play against him overseas. But I hope I get the chance, or who knows, maybe play with him someday.
So to continue on that college track, back, I can't remember the exact date, but there was a big game you had 38 points to pass the, you know, the Kings legend Oscar Robertson, who you ended up representing the Kings in the summer league. How was that game? I'm sure that's a huge deal for you.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, because I feel like that part of my life is like so long ago. But each one of those games, and I mean, obviously, especially that one, I want to say, yeah, I can't narrow down exactly where we were when we were. Might have been in a tournament somewhere, but I just like, I have so many like people to thank for helping me get to that point. My coaches, my teammates are obviously like the main ones, because in college it was my, like the teammates I had and the coaches I had, I feel like is so rare that everyone just clicked. We worked well together and we won games. And that was like the big thing, is just winning the summer league tournament. Cause at South Dakota State, it was, you had to win your conference tournament in order to make the NCAA tournament. But no, each one of those names, being able to pass the list, Oscar Robertson, Larry Bird, like those guys, it's incredible to be honored on a list like that. But I definitely feel like right now it's still surreal for me to look back on and see that. I feel like once I get older, maybe I'll look back and be like, oh, that's pretty cool. But as of right now, I'm kind of just like, ah, that's awesome, but I don't think too much about it.
It's truly incredible looking at all your college statistics, and you mentioned how long ago that was, but it's still great to look at. Now, you mentioned the people that help you get yourself to this point, and I had to touch on it, because looking into your stuff, you have the most athletically gifted family in the world's history. As someone whose mom, my mom is 4'11", and I feel cheated in life. Your own mom is the all-time leading scorer at University of Wyoming for women's basketball, and your dad played in the NFL. What do you guys play at family gatherings? What sport? I just have to know, what does the Dom family compete in?
Well, the thing is my family was, we were all over the place. I mean, obviously we did basketball. We didn't do much football. My dad, because no one was going to tackle my dad. But we played like the most random games. Like we call it Polish golf. It's like where you got the two golf balls at the end of the rope, swing them to like a ladder. That, ping pong, billiards, golfing. There's just like a list of a bunch of just random sports, like frisbee golf, things like that that we play. And it's kind of fun, just because I feel like we were so easily just be able to pick up all those things, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun growing up with an athletic and very, very active family.
That's so very cool. I love that it's not all just crazy athletic stuff. You guys take it easy with the Polish golf and whatnot. Well, I'll take a step back, and I'd love to hear some of your league-oriented questions, Jack, and please go for it.
Yeah, so international hoops, especially European hoops, it's been a lot in the news recently with the FIBA World Cup, the whole Noah Lyles thing. Now, I'm sure you've been asked probably a million times as an American in Europe, how you feel about all of that. You know, if you're not too tired of talking about it, I'd love to know what someone in your position would have to say about it.
Yeah, It's definitely an interesting take. I don't disagree with him, but I also don't agree with him. It's just, it's so hard because everyone, all hoopers around the world know that like the NBA is the best of the best. Like it is the best basketball in the world. But obviously at the same time, you know, you do have to give spotlights to those European competitions and teams that, you know, Spain's national team, Italy's national team, Serbia's national team, Germany's national team. Obviously, those are such high level teams that have so many NBA guys on them that I have thought about this before. I'm like, well, it's like they should take, you know, the competition, the top teams of each league each year and just play a big tournament and you can officially say you're a world champion each year and do something like that. And yes, I do think the United States would come out on top 95% of the time, but it definitely would, you know, make saying, okay, world champions on a yearly basis is like, it's better than just saying it. And it's like, oh, well, you have probably have so many other teams overseas that are like, oh, well, we could compete and we could beat, you know, United States team. So it's tough. I see both sides of it, but yeah, I think that's where I stand on it.
Yeah. European basketball is really so fascinating to, at least to me and to a lot of other NBA fans who actually get a chance to look at it because of there's so many different rules. So when I was doing research into them, recently got promoted to the top league of Italian basketball. That's a big deal. Promotion and relegation is not a thing in America. It's basically never been an idea, but recently it's been floated to avoid tanking and all of that. How does the promotion relegation thing fall into a season? I know it's an incredibly scary thing to think, hey, if we're the worst team in the league, we're not in the league anymore.
Yeah, it's a huge factor. For me personally, I've been lucky enough to never have to experience being in the relegation zone or anything like that. But I know so many guys, well, one, their contracts are based on if you get relegated, then your contract gets cut, things like that. And then obviously there's just added motivation. You never want to be in that position. But I definitely do think it gives a whole new, you know, meaning to, all right, well, we got to win games. Like no matter what's going on, we got to figure out what to do because if you get relegated, you get punished for it. And obviously that also in turn gives the teams in those lower divisions that opportunity to come up, show themselves, raise their budget. I actually think it's a great something that they could introduce into the NBA. I don't know how, because I feel like the G League would have to become more prominent before they could ever just start dropping teams down to the G League and then bringing them up from the G League. But I definitely think it's something that I don't know how they could do it in the NBA right now, whether, you know, if you lose, your budget decreases or things like that. I have no idea, but it definitely overseas, I love the concept of it. I love the idea of it. And I love that it definitely makes things so much more competitive.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds like an incredible situation. I get bombarded. And again, I have because of the FIBA World Cup, I've recently gained a significant European following. And with that, I'm constantly barraged with the idea that the European passion, especially with the fans, it's, you know, Americans couldn't even imagine it. How are the fan bases over there? I've heard incredible things.
Yes, I've seen some of the best fan bases and I've seen some of the worst fan bases. Like I've seen from, you're out on the court and they have like these covers over the opposing team benches because they're like throwing like legit euros, like coins and water bottles, and they're spitting on you and they're cussing you out and they're messaging you. And I've seen it all. And then I've also seen the craziest fan base is showing so much support and chanting, cheering the whole game. Like I don't think you would find that in the United States at all at an NBA arena where they are constantly in unison, like cheering and singing fight songs and doing this like the whole game for 2 hours straight, and they're going crazy. And then you have, and then obviously they let a lot more slide in these arenas overseas than they do in the NBA arenas. But I mean, flares and horns and just dudes going crazy, shirts off, like almost naked in the stands, and everyone's just loving it and going absolutely berserk. It's definitely a different world. Europeans and fans over here are so passionate about sports. It's awesome. It really is an awesome thing to see, and it's awesome to be able to be a part of both sides of it.
So going back onto the fan thing, you've got a pretty diverse team. Are people talking trash to you in English, or are they trying to talk to you in Italian? How's your Italian?
Well, I was going to say, actually, here I haven't run into it much. Only a couple teams I've played, I've had fans like message me in Italian and I have to translate. I can't say it on here because it's like pretty bad. The stuff that they say is actually, yeah, it's actually insane. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's incredible. But yeah, sometimes they'll try to talk like broken English and I'm just like, nah, I'm not hearing that. Like, don't speak to me. I'd rather just have you speak to me in Italian and I'll translate it. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see.
So in terms with the upcoming season, you guys had a good year last year, finished fourth. What are you thinking in terms of the upcoming season? I've seen a couple of you guys' transfer moves. I don't know a lot of the names, but I recognize a few. What do you think your prospects are going to the next season? How do you feel about working in next year?
I think it's going to be amazing. For us, we actually changed a lot. I think almost we only brought back 4 or 5 players from last year's roster. So we kind of had a total revamp. But so far from preseason games to our training camp, our guys are fantastic, amazing. And for us, I think the main thing is we're just focusing on us each day, getting better as a team. And we're kind of just going to let our play do the talking this year. I don't want to say anything or jinx anything for our season, but I definitely have a lot of confidence in us. I think it's going to be a special year for sure.
Is there a teammate that we should be looking out for? Is there someone who's, you know, up next, going to have an incredible year? Someone you want to highlight?
I think a guy who's going to step up, his name, he's an Italian dude. His name is Tommaso Baldasso. Incredible name. Really, mm-hmm. really incredible name. But he's a shifty little Italian guard, and he's got a strap. And I think he's going to – I call him the dark horse. Like, he's going to be a dark horse for us this year. And I think he's going to be a really, really good player for us.
All right. Tommaso Baldasso, I will be looking out for him.
Yep. Yep.
I'm excited. It's hard to watch EuroLeague games from the U.S., but I try my hardest.
That's one thing, and I've tried talking like to my agent because I think my agency, Octagon's, actually been working with the Spanish ACB is the name of their league on and EuroLeague now in streaming more games more easily to United States channels, and I wish it was a thing. I wish it was as easy as being able to just flip on and watch reruns because I can't tell you how many people and fans that are like, how can I watch your game? And I'm like, oh, well, you have to sign up for a VPN, then you have to sign up for this Italian network account, and then you have to have an Italian credit card in order to even sign up for it. And I'm like, it's virtually impossible. And I wish it was one thing that was easier for like fans and family back home to be able to tune in and just watch, you know, people you know overseas playing.
Yeah, I can imagine. With that being said, is there any sort of an NBA fan community in Europe at all? I mean, I'm sure there are some, but is it typically mostly EuroLeague as opposed to people watching the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, EuroLeague is definitely like the main thing. But you do see a ton of NBA jerseys walking around here all the time. I mean, you mainly see like LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Luka Doncic, guys like that. But no, there's definitely a huge, huge following of NBA fans in Europe. Just because you have so many prospects now from overseas that are coming into the league. So you definitely have a huge, huge fan base that followed the NBA from Europe.
All right. Well, that's good. I am boring Aaron to death with my EuroLeague questions.
Not at all. I'm having a great time. I loved Tommaso Baldasso. That is just an incredible name. I was reading a little bit about him while you guys were talking. For Olympia Milano, 2-time Italian League champion.
Yeah.
Some championship blood infused into the team. I thought that was really exciting. The EuroLeague is so awesome. I love the talk about the fans because you can't do much in the United States in terms of sitting there. You hang out and you're like, hey, basketball, I like it. But I wish they just, for a day, like, let's see what we can do and then paint our chests purple and go nuts. And I really thought that was cool enough over there in Europe.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a crazy experience.
So Mike, as a vegetarian myself, I saw an article saying that you switched over to a vegan diet in preparation. Are you still doing it? How hard is it to be a pro athlete while doing that?
I'm not doing it anymore.
Okay.
I did, in college for literally a year, and it was very, very tough. It was like just foreign, completely foreign to me. I had to learn how to cook with a whole new food group. I ate a lot of the same things. I think falafel was like my go-to, and I just, anything I could get with that, I cook with that, and veggie burgers, things like that. It definitely was a different experience. It opened up, my mind. I think I would say I felt better, but the hardest thing was just keeping on weight during that time. Just because my protein intake was, I feel like, so much lower. And obviously I have even more information now. It was definitely a different time. Something that I would go on strides and for sure try to try again, in short periods of time. So definitely something that I might have to look into.
Yeah, I was curious. I found it really difficult maintaining a vegan diet. I played sports at the college level, so nothing crazy, but it was incredibly difficult to stay on track.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
This is the most foreign part of this interview so far. I have never been vegan, and I did not play sports at the college level. Well, Mike, we appreciate your time so much. I want to ask you one last fun question. Growing up, throughout high school, throughout college, is there an NBA player you have tried to model your own game after?
I would say Dirk. Dirk was like the guy for me. He was the only NBA championship t-shirt I ever bought was when Dallas Mavericks won the championship. Dirk was like, for me, somebody who I saw that was ahead of his time. He was tall. He could shoot the crap out of the ball. And I loved the fadeaway, and I got into a lot of trouble with my mom during my seventh and eighth grade years when I would fade away in the game, and she would call timeout and rip my head off because she was like, you're not playing professional yet, so you can't fade away yet. Dirk was definitely like one of the idols that I had growing up. Watched a ton of film on him.
So your mom used to coach you? I hate to take away.
So she used to coach like my young traveling league team from when I was like a fourth grader, and then she coached me throughout junior high, also seventh and eighth grade. That was an awesome experience, and all my friends literally to this day still call her Coach Dom, which is a cool, it's very, very cool.
That's sweet. That's cool.
That's incredible. High expectations, I'm sure. But the Dirk fadeaway is something everyone at least has tried to practice one time. I think you got to break that out a few times in game for us. But thank you so much for your time. We'll start with Jack. Jack, where can the people find you?
The people can find me, as you usually do, anywhere on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. It's all the same. Jack the Kings fan.
And Mike, where are the people going to find you?
Mainly on Twitter and Instagram at Dominator24.
Is there anything you want the people to know, anything you want to promote, any news you want to break before we go?
I have an AAU team called 24MD, Team Dom. We've actually gained a ton of support and fans lately just because we've had our first Division I guy, Jaden Brown, at Idaho State, and I think we got a couple more Division I guys coming up for basketball. So we have a couple of boys teams, a couple of girls teams. So shout out to Team Dom. If you guys want to follow them, you can. If not, totally fine. They're based out of Fort Collins, Colorado. So it's a pretty cool program that I was able to help set up with my former AAU coach and kind of help give kids an opportunity to continue playing sports past the high school level. So
incredible. Thank you so much, Mike. And you can find me at Possible Chairs on TikTok as always. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back.